Welcome to Between Two Ovaries, your go-to for all things women's health.
And a lot of people just say like, oh, my vagina.
Yeah.
And yes. That's all of the above.
That's not your vagina.
No.
Well, it is.
We're here to cut through the confusion, bust some myths, and give you the facts straight from the experts.
You cannot still believe the amount of people that come to a gynecology clinic saying that they don't look right down there and they need something doing about it.
We're keeping it real, bringing you honest conversations about topics that matter to you.
Everything goes back to the menstrual cycle.
Yes. It's a low-risk procedure, but it's not a no-risk procedure.
From periods to menopause and everything in between, we've got you covered.
So whether you're here to learn, laugh, or just listen, you are in the right place.
As soon as I said it.
Hello everyone, welcome to our episode on miscarriage. So this episode's called Miscarriage Matters.
So we wanted to do this because it is so important and it affects so many people, and it's something that on the whole is kind of not spoken about. I think there is a massive drive at the moment for people to speak about miscarriage and to be more open so that they can receive support and so that everybody can be a bit like, oh yeah, that happened to me as well. And we can kind of understand more what's going on, and so that you know that you're not on your own and that there are lots of other people that have undergone a miscarriage and what happens. I think people, not naively, really, this is what should happen. They have a positive pregnancy test and they go, great, what pram shall I get? What school are they going to go to? Let's book them into nursery. And you know what? That would be amazing if that's what happened for people. And like for the people that that does happen to, I'm really, really happy that it does happen for them, because that's what you should have. That's, it should be really enthusiastic and happy the whole way through. But for a lot of people, and we're talking kind of 20% or even like a little bit more than that, unfortunately, after they've had that positive pregnancy test, their pregnancy won't carry on and be a live birth with a pram and everything else that you need to think about. It will unfortunately end in miscarriage.
I think a lot of like people think that it's way less common than it is as well. And the prevalence is higher than a lot of people would think.
Yeah, it's like that club you don't want to be a part of. As soon as you've like gone through one, then start talking about it, you realise how many people you know have also gone through one. And I think, like you said, it's up to you how you talk about it and if you talk about it. And you've got to decide what's right for you. But it's quite important to not have a stigma associated with miscarriage, which I think there has been in the past.
Definitely.
You know, like previously it was advised not to tell anyone you're pregnant until you've had your 12-week scan.
Yeah.
And at that gestation, the chance of miscarriage does go down. And if that's what you want to do now, that's absolutely fine. But it's also fine to do the opposite. It's also okay to talk about it early. And if, you know, you want to tell someone that you're pregnant and you would also want them to support you through a miscarriage, then that's something to think about.
I think it's definitely a personal choice.
Yeah.
It's totally a personal choice. But if you think that this is my best friend or this is my mum or this is someone that I want to be there to support me, then it's really fun that they're there for the positive pregnancy test and the planning. Yeah. And then if it is rubbish, and a miscarriage is rubbish, there's no two ways about this. There's no getting round. And we try to see the positive in various different things, and we try to kind of err on the side of caution and be like, hopefully this is not going to happen again and everything's going to be okay. But actually, it's just rubbish. Yeah. It is really rubbish.
I feel like that's even underselling it. I feel like it's worse than
rubbish.
Well,
if we could
swear on
it.
It's pretty
best not to swear, Nick.
Yeah.
It's that kind of, you want them for that time as well, because you want someone there to be like, do you know what, this was really rubbish, and let's kind of discuss it together. And as you've said, it's that club that you don't realise how many people are in it. So when you think that kind of one in five pregnancies will end in miscarriage, a lot of people that you know are gonna have had a miscarriage. And to kind of talk about them and to have it more freely kind of conversing about them means that you've got more information. So it means that you can advocate for yourself. It means that you can kind of make the right decisions. It means that you don't look back and think, oh, I wish I'd have done that. Because somebody else might have been like, well, I did this and this happened, or this worked, or this didn't work. And I just think knowing what you should, shouldn't do, can, don't have to do after you've had a miscarriage will mean that then you can kind of make the decisions that are correct for you at that time.
Yeah. Definitely. So we're going to cover like what miscarriage is, who it happens to, why it might happen, and then also risk factors and then symptoms, and we'll go through like what happens if you do get diagnosed with a miscarriage.
Yeah.
What kind of management options have you got? And we'll cover kind of everything to do with miscarriage in this episode.
Yeah. So what is a miscarriage?
Yeah. What is a miscarriage? So basically, it's loss of a pregnancy before 24 weeks gestation. Most miscarriages tend to happen in the first trimester, so that is from 0 to 13 weeks. But it is actually defined all the way up to 24 weeks, and that's when a baby would be viable if it was born. Viable as in, like, it, you know, if a baby was born at 24 weeks, then it wouldn't be classed as a miscarriage. If it wasn't alive, that would be classed as a stillbirth instead. So there's a little cut off there. But generally, when we talk about miscarriage, most people who have one tend to have them in the first trimester.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Much more common in the first trimester. When you move past, say, 8 weeks, if you've had a scan and the baby is the correct size and there's a heartbeat there, the chance of miscarriage plummets, like, in a good way. So it's less than 3% after that.
Yeah.
So the change is massive from having a baby on a scan with a heartbeat at 8 weeks to when you do that positive pregnancy test, if you do it at 4 weeks, which a lot of people get a little bit confused with these. Pregnancy tests, I think, can confuse people even more. So when you have your first day of your period, so when you start bleeding, that's the first day of your period. And then when you are due your period again, you would be 4 weeks pregnant if you have a positive pregnancy test, which blows a lot of people's minds.
Yeah, I'm still not really over it. In one of our previous episodes, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Lots of people don't understand it as well. Like, no. one of my friend's friends got very confused about her dates, and my friend asked me if she could message me and ask me about it, because her midwife didn't help explain it in a way that she could understand. I think she was just really stressed, and then I was like, oh god, what's this question gonna be like, this is so stressful. And it was actually just really straightforward. It was exactly this. It was that, like, nobody had explained that weeks 0 to 2, you're definitely not pregnant, you've not even ovulated, but they're counted in your pregnancy if you become pregnant at the end of that cycle. Which is confusing.
Yes.
Definitely confusing. So when you have the pregnancy tests and they're picking up hormones really early on, and they say kind of 1 to 2 weeks, 2 to 3, 3 to 4 weeks, it doesn't actually correlate to your actual pregnancy.
Yeah. Oh, because that's how long since fertilization.
Yeah, I think that they all get, I think you get very mixed up with the numbers.
Yeah, they are confusing.
Because they say like 4 weeks pregnant, but I guess if you were 4 weeks hormonally pregnant, you might be 6 weeks actually pregnant.
Yeah, so you have to just remember that the first day of your period is day one of a pregnancy, in a sense, even though you were definitely not pregnant at that time.
I was going to mention in that pregnancy tests do pick up pregnancy a lot earlier than it used to. So you can, ovulate and then potentially 7 days later, even before you've missed your period, have a positive test.
Yeah.
So a lot of the time people know they're pregnant from a much, much earlier week than they would have done previously. Like, when pregnancy tests weren't that sensitive, you wouldn't know until you'd missed your period. So it's actually probably quite a fair number of miscarriages that are being picked up because we can diagnose a pregnancy earlier, but they would have maybe never actually got past that first few days.
Yeah.
Which is something we have to deal with. Like, we do detect pregnancies a lot earlier, and that means that people will know that their pregnancies haven't continued earlier, and that is still a miscarriage, and that's still something that is upsetting. But it means that we're probably finding more of them than we previously would have done.
Yeah, so you've had an implantation because you've got that hormone that's now being detected when you've had a wee on a stick, but you, unfortunately, a few days later, when you're due your period, you've kind of had a bleed, which is a miscarriage. It's a really early loss, but it is a miscarriage. It counts as a miscarriage. You've had a positive pregnancy test. You're allowed to feel upset. You don't need to kind of feel like you can't feel upset. You can tell people that it's happened or not if you don't want. But with regards to medicine, from that matters, and I know we're going slightly off the realms of what we were going to do, but if I think
we
did
just
that.
Fits.
We meander through. Yeah. It fits in nicely with this. So if you have a positive pregnancy test and then a few days later have a bleed and it's when your period was due, do a pregnancy test a week later. If it's negative, you don't need to seek any medical advice if you feel okay and everything's going okay, because unfortunately we can't do anything. We genuinely can't do anything a lot of the time for miscarriages, but when somebody's had a very early positive and then a negative pregnancy test, then it's a complete miscarriage. Again, back to the whole it's rubbish, but it's not something that you would need a scan for. It's not something that would need follow-up because you wouldn't see anything on a scan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no kind of like medical treatment you need. You might need support for your well-being. And if you want to see a doctor, then would recommend doing it anyway. Yeah. But it might be that, you know, you see the doctor and they tell you what's going on and that's you don't need anything else after that. Yeah. But yeah, so I think I interrupted your little recap of early pregnancy there. So you were on tour of your ovulation.
Oh yeah, so we were just saying that. So the day of your missed period, you'll be 4 weeks pregnant. That's because you ovulate 2 weeks before your period. When you ovulate, if you have intercourse around that time, then you could become pregnant, and then you would have a positive pregnancy test on the day you miss your period, or you can have a positive pregnancy test a few days before if you're testing early. So 4 weeks pregnant from missed period.
Yeah.
Okay.
As we've mentioned, how common it is, really. So, kind of overall, the statistics that are widely out there is first trimester miscarriages happen in sort of 20 to 25% of pregnancies. So it's like one in four.
That's
potentially
a lot.
It's a lot. Yeah. It's very, very common. Mm-hmm. And I think, like we said before, sometimes you don't realise how common it is until you know someone who's had one, or you've had one, or and you listen to this podcast.
You probably do know someone that's had one, but just again, not everyone speaks about it.
Yeah, exactly. So it is very, very common. And you can go into the ages, obviously. It does depend on your age, how likely it is that your pregnancy will end in miscarriage. And with most things, the risk of miscarriage also goes up with increasing age. So overall, it's sort of about 25%. But then if you break it down into sort of five-year age categories, we've got, if you're less than 20, it's about 16%. If you're 20 to 30, about 12%. If you are 30 to 34, about 14%. 35 to 39, 18%. Then it goes up more. So if you're over 40 to 44, it's 37%. And if you're over 44, it's more like 50%. So it jumps up quite a lot towards
It makes 40. Sense. So if you've listened to any of the other episodes, we've said that kind of when you're getting older, you've not got as many eggs left. The quality of the eggs that are there are not going to be as good. So your hormones are kind of battering your ovaries to work better. And you're producing these eggs that potentially have probably got, well, not probably, but a lot of them will not have the correct number of chromosomes. Mm-hmm. And we know that when you have a miscarriage, the most common cause of miscarriage is having the wrong number of chromosomes. So in the pregnancy tissue. So we think that like we produce these eggs, they get fertilized, then they go on to be a pregnancy. But actually a lot of the times they integrally are just don't have the correct number of chromosomes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, also with that, does it go up with age for the male as well?
Yes.
Because I think sometimes they're not blame, but people mm-hmm. can assume, oh, something wrong with my eggs, and it's not always something wrong with the woman's reproductive system.
Yeah, definitely.
It can be something, a fault with the sperm, if the sperm don't have the right number of chromosomes.
They also become dodgy the older they get as well. So it's a bit different for men.
Not as
a
early.
Bit older. So for women, it's the numbers we just said there, but for men it is older.
The reproductive lifespan is skewed, and mm-hmm. They don't start declining until older mm-hmm. when they're men compared to female. Unfortunately, the female, we do have a ticking time bomb of eggs, of knowing when you can and can't get pregnant. Mm-hmm. And that's not anything that we can do about it. There's no specific treatment that we mm-hmm. can do or give mm-hmm. that will help this.
Can't pause it.
No, can't pause it.
No.
So just for people to be aware, if they're like, what are you talking about, chromosomes? And we talk about aneuploid and euploid. Euploid means the correct number of chromosomes. Aneuploid means an incorrect number of chromosomes. You can still have aneuploidy, so the incorrect number of chromosomes, but you can go on to live, survive, be okay, because everybody with Down syndrome has not the usual number of chromosomes, but they have an extra chromosome 21. Mm-hmm. So there are different conditions that don't result in a miscarriage just because you don't have the right number of chromosomes, but most problems with chromosomes will result in a miscarriage.
Yeah, and that's the most common cause of miscarriage. So in the first trimester, we don't always know what the cause is, and that's one thing that, so we will mention, so Tommy's they're doing lots of research into better ways to know why people have had miscarriages and maybe prevent them in the future. Yeah. But we know that most early pregnancies, if they end in miscarriage, it's because of an abnormal number of chromosomes. And that it's really important to know that that doesn't necessarily mean that you and your partner have an abnormal number of chromosomes.
The answer is you probably haven't.
You probably don't.
It's really, really, really... Well, it's really, really, really rare for you to have... what you would need to have, we're getting technical here. I'm trying to do it in an untechnical way. So in order for you to keep having miscarriages because you're producing an unbalanced number of chromosomes, you both need to have balanced translocations. So like... I am digging a hole. We would assume have the correct number of chromosomes, Eleanor, but you could have a balanced translocation between two of them. So between two of the chromosomes, so they look like you've got the right number of chromosomes because you have got the right number, but actually two of them have swapped. But when you pass that on to a child, that could pass as an unbalanced problem.
Yeah.
And would it have to be both partners that have this?
No, just one.
Just one.
Yeah. Okay. So, but honestly, it's really, really rare. Yeah. So I think people worry as soon as they have... a miscarriage, they're like, it's because
there's
something wrong with it, which is a natural reaction.
I need my carrier type doing. So carrier type would look at how many chromosomes you've got and how they're made up.
They also look pretty.
Yeah.
They do
look really good.
I don't think I've seen them before.
I must not have taken biology.
Yeah. Did you get A-level?
Oh, you must have seen
you will
one.
Have done. We'll refresh your memory after.
Yeah.
Show some chromosomes.
But, yeah. Honestly, it's really rare for this to happen.
So most people who have an early miscarriage, and we don't know the cause because most people don't know the cause, it's probably that. It's probably that there's an abnormal number of chromosomes in that pregnancy. So the sperm and the egg met, but they weren't quite set up to create a baby.
And that's specific to that sperm and that egg in that moment.
Yeah. Completely that. Yeah. So if you think of all the millions of
sperm that go.
Yeah, and the eggs that you have, like it's just... One of those things.
It is chance. And we're not, like, as species go, we're like the worst at reproduction. we're not actually making the babies. And also, we're really bad at delivering them. Like, our labours are horrendous. Like,
not to put anyone
We're not very good. When you look at dogs and cats and, like, lambs, you're like, what the hell? How do you do this?
But yeah, so resilient.
but that's actually, in a way, kind of reassuring because it's mostly not you and your partner. It's just the way that we were built, and we're not as good at reproducing as other animals are. Mm-hmm. So most of the early miscarriages are due to abnormal number of chromosomes. Yep. And that egg and sperm that meet might get to a certain point. So you might get your positive test. You might then even see something on scan, but it might not progress normally. Mm-hmm. And then eventually will end in a miscarriage. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What else might cause a miscarriage?
Good question.
That is a good question.
So lots of different things. So you can have problems with the placenta. So the placenta is what feeds the baby, and it's your interaction between mum and baby, like the interface. So if that's not implanted properly, then that could be a problem because the baby's not being fed enough. Mm-hmm. You can have problems with infection. So sometimes people's the water sac that holds the baby in it would get infected because your waters would burst, so water would come out and then your baby's not protected, so you could get an infection. You can have problems with like clotting abnormalities with your blood. People call it sticky blood. And when people have recurrent miscarriages, we look a little bit further to see if they have any of these conditions such as sticky blood. Mm-hmm. Because we can give them medications to try and prevent miscarriages. So that's one of the things.
Also, the shape of your womb can
give
you... So some people will have a pear-shaped womb, but some people will have a heart-shaped womb, and sometimes you can have more than one cavity. They're just kind of what we call congenital abnormalities, but they're just different shaped wombs. They don't always cause problems, but in some people, they might mean that you're more likely to have a miscarriage.
I can see Lorna's confused.
Congenital
anomalies.
That just means like something you're born with that's outside of the norm.
Sort of like you may not know, but it's always been there.
Okay. Like some people might be born with like an extra digit, an extra finger. Mm. That's a congenital anomaly, but very normal and treatable and
not usually an issue.
When you say infections, can this be caused by other sort of infections, say if you had chlamydia when you got pregnant? Is it that sort of thing? Or
it can be.
It can be, but it shouldn't be. So chlamydia, a lot of the times, can, if untreated, leave you with tubal damage, so damage mm-hmm. in your fallopian tubes, which can mean it's harder to get pregnant and you've got more chance of getting an ectopic pregnancy. If you have an STI while you're pregnant, we can treat the STI still, so you should still seek antibiotic help. And it's not usually that causes a miscarriage. I think it's difficult to kind of put it all down. We know that bacterial vaginosis sometimes we want to try and keep on top of, make sure that we've treated this. We also, if someone's got a urine infection, would want to treat that. So even if they're asymptomatic, so they haven't got any symptoms, but we can see that they've got a urine infection, we would treat that, which we wouldn't do on a usual basis. So there are certain things that we're a little bit more, we would treat. Yeah. But there isn't kind of if you have this infection, you'll have a miscarriage. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, maybe just a risk factor.
Yeah.
The other big factor with miscarriage as well is the womb lining, so the endometrium. So obviously when you have a fertilised egg, it comes down into the womb and then has to interact with the endometrium, and the endometrium has to be ready for it to implant. So there are some situations where the endometrium isn't ready or an egg can't implant there. So this is where there's probably an avenue for future research, and there's definitely more going into finding out more about this. But something that people might hear about is people being given progesterone to help prevent miscarriage, which is something that happens in, so currently in the guidelines, if someone has had a previous miscarriage and then they attend with bleeding and they've had a scan that shows that the pregnancy is in the right place, which is important, and also that there's a heartbeat, then we can prescribe progesterone pessaries, which can help reduce the risk of miscarriage by a very tiny percentage. Yeah, that's right. I think in the big study that looked at this, in these women, it reduced the increased the live birth rate, so the chance of having a live baby, by 4 or 5%.
Yeah. Oh, wow. See, so this, it's only very that small. That confuses me, because obviously some people use the progesterone-only pill as contraception to stop you from getting pregnant.
Yeah. So I'm
so progesterone can stop you getting pregnant, but also help you stop having a miscarriage.
Yeah. So if you have constant progesterone, then you're not having a normal cycle, so then you're not going to get pregnant. But if you are pregnant and you have potentially low progesterone, or you're someone that's at a risk of miscarriage in those conditions I've set out before, then progesterone can help support the pregnancy.
And progesterone is naturally occurring in the body, isn't it?
Yeah. So this would be to support it. But it really doesn't work for most people that are bleeding in early pregnancy, just to put it out there. It's for most people bleeding in early pregnancy, we can't do anything. And it's, again, rubbish. And a lot of people have bleeding and go on to have healthy pregnancies, but we don't want to see you bleeding. We would prefer that you didn't have any bleeding, because that would be really more reassuring than having a scan bleeding and the scan being okay and you continuing to bleed. That's more worrying. So the with regards to the last couple of things that can cause miscarriage as well, there'll be lots of things that we won't have covered, but the other couple of things that people worry about, they've had a scan and they've got a polyp or a fibroid or something like that, so they've got a growth in the lining of the womb. Now, on the whole, we don't know about these and we don't know if they affect pregnancies. If you have a fibroid that is bigger than 3 centimetres, we think it might affect implantation. If you have a polyp, we think about removing it, because again, we're not entirely sure whether it's needed or not, but we usually advise to remove it because the growth could be have abnormal cells in it as well.
I'm going to test your knowledge now as well. Go tell on. Us what a fibroid is.
So I'm asking her not to say that. I've just done Lorna's Lorna's survey. So a fibroid is where it's like a growth of not cancerous.
Yeah,
she's got buzzwords
in the womb.
Yes,
and it's quite hard.
Yeah.
And they can calcify.
Yeah.
Oh, and we're going to do a whole podcast about it. And Ellen's the expert.
I didn't know what that was before I did Lorna's.
So, that's what a fibroid is. And then also we mentioned polyps, which are like little... Oh, do you want, Lorna? Do you want to take a polyp?
Well, I'll take one. It's like a skin tag, right?
Yeah.
That's what I've like, when I've Googled it before, I've been like, what is the difference?
Skin tag, so on the inside of the womb.
So is it attached to the...
endometrium.
The endometrium.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you can get polyps everywhere, like cervix or in endometrium.
Bowel.
Everywhere.
But, I thought you went straight for nose.
Yeah. Because I can see jump. But when they're in the lining of the womb, we don't kind of understand exactly what they do to a pregnancy or a potential pregnancy. So we usually advise to remove them.
Yeah,
basically. And people worry also about their cervix. So the cervix, we have discussed before. So you've got the womb, which is the pear-shaped
organ,
yeah, good word, with the fallopian tubes, so the tubes coming off it and the ovaries at the side. And then at the bottom of the womb, you've got this cervix. The cervix is quite a hard structure, can be kind of 5 centimetres long, and this kind of holds tight with the pregnancy inside it. Now, lots of people worry that their cervix isn't working properly. And cervix in some situations can be weaker than other people's. That can be caused because you've had treatment to your cervix, so you've had some of your cervix removed because of funny cells, or it can be just one of those things that we don't know, or it can be provoked by an infection. So some people require a stitch in the cervix, they go to a preterm labour clinic, they have progesterone pessaries. These are kind of a high-risk pregnancy group, and a lot of the time, unfortunately, we would never know about these people until they've had a miscarriage. Mm-hmm. So we would, if this has happened to you, you've had like a mid-trimester loss, so a loss after 12 weeks and before 24 weeks, then we would be seeing you in a preterm labour clinic and discussing kind of the risk factors that happened. Can we put it down to anything? Mm-hmm. Do we need to think about watching your cervix in this pregnancy? So a lot of people have serial cervical lens.
I just love the idea of a lot of CCTV cameras.
It's an ultrasound scan, so it's a vaginal ultrasound scan, and you can measure the length of the cervix.
When you say a vaginal ultrasound scan, is that when you scan from the inside?
Yeah, so it's like a little probe that goes in the vagina, like a speculum, which is the
because I think a lot of the time when people think of an ultrasound scan, you think of on the outside, like they do on like and you can see it on the screen. But you can do internal ultrasounds,
and you still see it on the screen. You do still see it on the screen, but just to actually highlight this, most of our early pregnancy scans, so most scans before 12 weeks, we do internally.
Okay.
Yeah, and it makes sense when you think about it, because an early pregnancy is tiny.
Like, easier to see from close.
Absolutely tiny.
Yeah, teeny, cells. And so if you're going to scan from a tummy, you've got quite a lot to get through to get down into the pelvis when the womb is so small. Whereas if you scan vaginally, you're right next to it. There's just a cervix in between.
See, I feel like that's such a good thing to know, because see, if I was like early pregnancy going for my first scan, they were like, right, we're going to go... I'd be like, whoa.
So you would, like, in like if you have no problems in pregnancy, your first scan is around 12 to 14 weeks. Is on your tummy.
Okay.
But if you ever have a reason to go for an earlier scan, which, you know, a lot of people do even if they don't have problems, lots of people pay for private scans.
Yeah. I mean, clearly we would.
They're more likely.
I'm someone in.
Yeah. This is unrelated, so just really quickly.
Oh, yeah.
But what is the cream they put on before they do it?
The jelly. It's just like, it's like lube, basically.
Just so that it's called Optolube.
Yeah,
because I didn't know if it was part of the scan,
need to put on your skin to be able to see the ultrasound. If you just put a probe on your skin, it won't really give you a good picture. It improves the quality of the picture.
Interesting.
Don't get me into the physics, because I don't know.
We'll move on.
I feel like we really do need to say this about the internal ultrasound scan. So when people come and they are early pregnant and we scan, always do it vaginally because we can see much, much better. And as Alison said, we've got lots to go through. But also, if you think a pregnancy doesn't get to your tummy button till 20 weeks. So you're going to the hospital and you're 5 and 6 weeks pregnant. Yeah. I don't care that you say, oh, look, I'm showing. You're not. Like, because
your lunch.
The progesterone is below you.
Because the pregnancy is not up to your tummy bit until 20 weeks. Mm. So that's why we can't see anything. We discussed previously how small the womb is. So if the womb is like your fist size, and then you've got something inside, like we're looking for something absolutely tiny. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So even when you're doing a vaginal scan, so an internal scan, when the person is breathing, literally like something's coming in and out of focus, because that's how much it's how small it is. for what you're looking at.
Not me stopping breathing there.
I watched a video the other day, and it was a video of someone doing an ultrasound whilst the woman was laughing. And it was like the baby was just being
the baby's being wobbling to me. See, dancing around.
They're really difficult, and you're trying to see something that's really tiny. Yeah. The other thing is that I just wanted to highlight, and that's why I've gone back to it, sorry, but it's that this does not harm the pregnancy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we do have a lot of people that come in that say, oh, well, I had an internal scan. Not a lot of people, but they'll say, I've had an internal scan and then that caused a miscarriage before, so I don't want an internal scan this time. Mm-hmm. And it's just not true.
Yeah.
Like, there is no evidence of that at all. We don't go into your cervix. We don't push on the cervix. We do a scan so that we can see into your womb. That is all we're trying to do. Unfortunately, that pregnancy was going to end in miscarriage, and that's what happened, whether we scanned you or we didn't scan you.
I think that's a really nice side into one of the key messages that is really important with miscarriage, is that although there are some causes, there will not have been something you did that caused your miscarriage. Mm-hmm. And that is a natural reaction that most people have. So say someone comes and has a scan and unfortunately is told they have had a miscarriage, they might be like, oh, what did I do last night? Like, what did I do the day before? I had a Diet Coke. Like, did that cause it? Or I had sex. Did that cause it? Or like, I didn't know I was pregnant until I was 6 weeks and I had a drink. Like, that is very, 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 very unlikely that anything that you have done has caused your miscarriage. But that is the first thing that women think.
Yeah.
And it's a natural reaction. But it's really important to know that that is not the case.
I have this discussion day in, day out with IVF patients, so patients that are going through fertility treatment to get pregnant. And they will say, should I or shouldn't I do X, Y, and Z? And I'm like, try and keep as little I wish I hadn't done as possible. Mm-hmm. So if you aren't a runner, don't take up running. if you don't, just try and make it so that you've got as little what ifs as possible. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because whatever happens, and however many times I say it's nothing that you've done, you're still going to be like, but I shouldn't have done that.
I think people like to put a blame on something to make it feel more like, oh God, what?
It kind of helps you make sense of it, doesn't it? You want to know why something happened, but sadly, most of the time, early pregnancy miscarriage, we won't be able to tell you exactly why it happened. We can say it's probably a chromosomal thing, it's probably this, but most of the time you don't know, and that is really hard, and that's when people try and fill in the gaps and say, it must have been this, it must have been this. But things like, if you're a runner, going for a run is not going to cause a miscarriage. You know, having a bath is not going to cause a miscarriage. The amount of things that you
just panic
and worry.
As crazy as the video looked, laughing isn't going to cause
it. No.
You can still be joyful while pregnant.
Yeah. And most people, I think, just to say, when you've had one miscarriage, you will go on to have another pregnancy. You've gotten pregnant. Mm-hmm. Yes, you've had a miscarriage. Yes, as we've said, it's rubbish. But you will go on to have a normal pregnancy after. Mm-hmm. It's really uncommon to keep having miscarriages and miscarriages. Mm-hmm. To have three miscarriages in a row, it's 1 in 100 people.
Oh, wow.
So 1% of people will have three miscarriages in a row. So, yes, you would be like, oh, my God, it's happened once, it's going to happen again.
Yeah.
And it might happen again. We can't say that it's not going to happen again, but when you tell yourself that actually 1 in 100 will have three miscarriages in a row, that is a tiny proportion compared to the rest of the
population. Yeah, I think it can lead to a lot of anxiety of thinking, well, it's happened once, it's...
Totally agree.
It's got to happen again. It's
my
something
fault.
That's wrong with me.
Totally agree.
And that it can be hard to deal with that anxiety and almost like PTSD. Like
absolutely,
you're thinking, this
has
happened before and you've got trauma from it and you don't want it to happen again.
It's that difficult thing of like, you've got no joy. You know, I said at the beginning, I really wish that everybody could have a positive pregnancy test and have a baby 9 months later, because that's like what should happen. Mm-hmm. But then when you have your positive pregnancy test and you've had a miscarriage, you're like, oh, well, I'll just wait for the bleeding, shall I?
Yeah.
Like, and it just like does put a dampener on it.
Definitely,
all.
Yeah.
And if you are, I was going to say, then there are support networks for this.
We'll put links to the different support networks, but there's lots and lots of different supports. So Tommy's, we mentioned, there's also a charity called Petals, which is for women and men who've had baby loss, and there you can get free counselling.
Yeah.
So it really is helpful for if you are that person that is really worried, as you would be, about having another miscarriage. it can help you deal with those emotions and help you cope with it.
Yeah, I saw a video of a lady discussing how she'd felt after she'd had her miscarriage, and she said it's even just small things people don't think of. Like, she said she'd already had slight body changes by the time she had it. Her hips were wider, her clothes weren't fitting the same, and she said after she'd had the miscarriage, she still has this feeling, oh, my jeans are a bit tight, but she's not got the baby to come along with it.
Yeah.
And she'd said, like, oh, it's just like a constant reminder.
Yeah. And I think that's another reason why it's nice. Like, if you want to tell people about your miscarriage or tell people you're pregnant and, you know, potentially then tell them if, unfortunately, you have a miscarriage, it's for those reasons. Like, you know, you don't. It's hard to deal with that on your own, to, like, try and go to work and do your normal things, even if you have other children. Like, trying to get on with life is really hard when you've got a constant reminder that you've had a miscarriage and you're worried.
Yeah.
So if you benefit from having support from friends and family, do it. And if not friends and family, then the support networks that are available.
Yeah. And it's difficult because you know that when you've had a miscarriage, everybody you know will be pregnant, or everybody's talking about pregnancy. Yeah. Anything on any stream that you're looking on will be talking about pregnancy.
All the adverts.
Because that's all your Instagram feeds. That's
and when it's on your mind, it's like when people have a breakup and they're like, why is everyone around me getting married right
now.
It's what happens. So having that support rather than just like locking yourself away and being like, well, I can't attend anything to do with the pregnancy, you need to, you know, kind of, well, you don't need to, but it is good to find joy in other people as well, and be a friend to other people, because then they can be a friend to you and you can have an open dialogue.
I think what's really important to say as well is that just because it's been quite early on that this has happened, it doesn't get rid of that upset anymore. You're still just as valid to feel the way that you do.
Yeah.
And even if it's like you think, oh God, it wasn't that long, I shouldn't feel this upset, you can.
Yeah.
And you can still seek help for
totally.
It.
Yeah, there's no hierarchy in pregnancy loss. It doesn't matter whether you're 1 day pregnant or 100
days
pregnant.
It's not a competition. It's absolute rubbish. Yeah.
Well, it's your headspace, isn't it? You need to decide what's best for your headspace. If you are someone, though, that hasn't sought medical help, especially because what we've said, like, if you've had a positive pregnancy test and have a negative pregnancy test, you don't need to see a medic, you don't need to have a scan. But if you've had this multiple times, please make sure that you're advocating for yourself and you do go and see somebody.
I think it's hard for people to know as well who to go see, who to go speak to.
So if you see a GP, they can refer you to a tertiary centre, because there'll always be a recurrent miscarriage clinic.
Yeah, so that's generally, in the UK anyway, if you've had 3 first trimester miscarriages, you would meet criteria to get referred to that clinic. Really briefly, if you go to that clinic, what they're looking for is any underlying causes for recurrent miscarriage. You might actually still have none. You might just be an unlucky person that's had 3 miscarriages in a row.
You might just have none.
You probably will have none.
Yeah.
Most people don't have a reason.
So most people that come to a recurrent miscarriage clinic, it's really sad because they've waited to get to the recurrent miscarriage clinic, they've got there and they're ready for their answer and the magic bullet of treatment. Doesn't happen.
No,
it's really few and far between that we see abnormalities in when they come to the recurrent miscarriage clinic. And so it's that kind of support and that, look, we'll scan you from earlier on. We'll try some prophylactics, so try some just in case.
What's a prophylactic? Something to prevent
a miscarriage. So like there are some treatments that you can try if you are someone that's had multiple miscarriages, some things you can try to prevent a future miscarriage.
But I think good research.
Yeah, not great. What you said there is really important. So people will go to the recurrent miscarriage clinic thinking they're going to get a diagnosis and a treatment. But what you will get, definitely, is support.
Yeah.
And that's probably the more important thing for most of those people, because there isn't always an underlying cause. Yeah. But you need help, you need support, and you need someone to, like, you know, hold your hand while you try and go through it again and again and again. Until eventually it happens. Anyway.
So, symptoms. Yeah. So you might have no symptoms, and I think these, I really feel for these patients that turn up to their 12-week scan and they've been really excited and they get to the scan and the baby stopped growing at 9 weeks. So you've had no symptoms, you are still pregnant, and you are still pregnant, but unfortunately the baby stopped growing and then you've had a miscarriage. So it could be silent, so you don't know anything about it. The other symptoms that people can have, they can have a little bit of bleeding, they can have a lot of bleeding, they can have some crampy pain in their tummy. So you can have quite a lot of different symptoms. If you've got any symptoms, you've got a positive pregnancy test, attend. They will be different compared to where you live, but
a lot of units now have an early pregnancy assessment unit. Mm-hmm. So we have one in Liverpool, but these are kind of in most places.
Yeah.
So an early pregnancy assessment unit, and you would be assessed there. And depending how pregnant you were, what they would do is a pregnancy test first.
Yeah.
Which can be upsetting in itself, because as we've said, sometimes you can have a positive and then a negative quite quickly. But if you've got a positive pregnancy test, usually a scan, well, you would get examined first.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So a speculum examination, we've discussed this before, where either a plastic or a metal speculum is used to have a look into your vagina and have a look at your cervix to see how much you're bleeding and what's going on with your cervix. And we can tell quite a lot from that investigation. And also, again, just to reiterate, it doesn't harm a pregnancy.
Yeah.
So this people can kind of be worried that we would be doing something to the pregnancy. I promise it's all on the outside. We're just having a look at your cervix, and it can give us more information about what is happening. Mm-hmm. And then on the back of that, a lot of times we would arrange a scan. Unfortunately, most times you wouldn't get a scan straight away. Depends who's on, depends what time it is, depends.
Usually within a few days
that you would get your scan. It's definitely within a few days, but it's a really worrying time, and it would be great if everybody could have scan no matter what time they came to hospital, but it's just not a thing. So there's no point in pretending that that's the service that's there.
No, maybe
because
one day.
It's not.
The other thing before we talk too much about the scans, just to mention, is that symptom-wise, bleeding, so again, people might not know symptoms, but bleeding and pain, also normal pregnancy symptoms. So you can have a growing pregnancy and have bleeding. Lots of people describe implantation bleeding, which, you know, around 6 weeks, maybe up to 8 weeks, you might get a light bit of bleeding. Light is key. So if it's just very light, it might not be anything to worry about. But equally, you can have light bleeding and be having a miscarriage. Yeah. So it always needs investigation. Mm-hmm. Pain is also normal. So having a bit of crampy or discomfort in your pelvis is normal in early pregnancy.
It's like your body changing.
But again, you can't tell just from your symptoms if it's normal or not. So if you're worried, go to hospital or go somewhere.
And it's that thing where, like, we would prefer that you didn't have pain and bleeding.
Yes.
So when people come and they want reassurance, I would always say to people, it would be better if you're not bleeding, because we wouldn't have any concerns then as compared to my concerns now.
You know, these kind of things where, like, we're saying pain's normal and a little bit bleeding's normal. If you had them, you wanted to just get a little bit of reassurance, is that like a call 111 idea?
No, so like, if you have those, you should seek advice.
Okay.
Yes. Because they're not normal.
Don't sit quietly.
No. It might just be that you have those symptoms and you are not necessarily having a miscarriage.
Yeah.
You definitely need to see a health professional to check that first.
They're abnormal, but could still be all okay.
Okay.
Because, you know, as you would, you have bleeding, you're pregnant, you think miscarriage.
Yeah.
But potentially, it might not be the case, but you need to see a health professional to be checked out.
Yeah.
The other thing on symptoms, because lots of people will track their pregnancy symptoms, sore boobs, nausea, constipation, all of that. Your pregnancy symptoms going away, again, doesn't always mean miscarriage.
Yeah.
They can just go away on their own, and your pregnancy can be carrying on. So it's hard and it's scary, because all you have is your symptoms. Mm-hmm. But again, if you're worried about that, seek help.
Yeah.
But it doesn't all, you know, if you're someone that's had a miscarriage before and you're anxious and you're really tracking everything, changes in your symptoms are really crap for actually telling you what's going on with your pregnancy.
Agree.
Yeah.
So you've got to unit and you've now had a scan. So we've kind of gotten to that point now. So on your scan could say quite a few different things. It could say, look, we're really reassured the pregnancy is in the correct place. It's viable. There is a heartbeat there and we're happy to discharge you. So that would be the best case scenario. Mm-hmm. It can also say the pregnancy is in the right place and it looks like it's the right size for how many weeks you are, but we don't know the viability yet because there's no heartbeat yet. So then another scan could be rearranged to kind of just check to make sure that the pregnancy continues to grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The other things that it can show is it can show kind of a sac or a pregnancy that's not developing correctly. So we would be able to sometimes, depending on the size of things, tell you that you've had a miscarriage straight away.
Okay.
That doesn't happen in a lot of times because you could be a little bit out on your dates. We could be a bit unsure on the sizes. And then we would rescan you in 10 to 14 days to kind of check the growth between the two scans. Mm-hmm. But I would hope, and I would always, if I was worried, give kind of a warning shot of, this doesn't look the size that we think it should look. Mm. I'm worried that at this stage there should be a yolk sac and a fetal pole, so two of the bits, and they're not there. So I would usually try and give a bit of a warning shot and then rearrange a scan. And then if they have any changing symptoms in the meantime, they can come back.
Just on that as well, I think it's important to say that we don't, like, a miscarriage isn't diagnosed lightly. It's not a quick pop a scanner on and say, that doesn't look normal. Miscarriage, go and get some management. It's two people, so you need to have two trained professionals to look at a scan and agree. And as Nick said, often we don't just do one scan. If we're not sure, we'll repeat and see if it's growing. Because I actually have seen quite a few things online, weird things, where people are saying that they've, you know, they've been told that it's a miscarriage, but they've decided to wait, and they're like, they're 16 weeks by their dates, but it's looking like an 8 week size baby. Like, in those situations, it's not growing normally. And you do need to trust your healthcare provider. If you're not sure, ask, obviously. But, you know, we don't just diagnose people with a miscarriage willy-nilly. It's taken very, very seriously.
There's really, really strict criteria about when you can diagnose a miscarriage. That's why a lot of the times on the first scan, we don't. Because it just doesn't meet the criteria.
So it's taken seriously.
So it's got to be kind of interval scanning. So to kind of check growth.
The other thing you can get diagnosed with is pregnancy of unknown location, which is a weird term, and often not something anyone's ever heard of. Have you heard of it?
No, but...
Only when you guys mention it occasionally.
Do you mean by where the pregnancy is implanted in the wrong location, not in the womb?
So that is a different thing. This is an unknown location, as in, basically, you're pregnant, you've come to see someone, because you've got symptoms like bleeding or pain. You've had a scan, and we can't see a pregnancy on the scan. So
but
that might
tested
be
positive.
Yeah, you're pregnant, but we don't know where it is. Most commonly, that's because it's too early to see on a scan, because you can't see a pregnancy from day one on the scan. Teeny tiny
like,
little
where's
things.
She gone?
So most of the time, it's that. Other times, it could be that it is in the wrong place and that we can't see where it is yet. Mm-hmm. Or it might be that you're pregnant, it's very, very small, it's not growing, and hence we can't see it anywhere. So in those situations, you always get further follow-up. So blood tests and another scan to see if it's growing.
People find it really frustrating, and I can totally see where they're coming from, because a lot of times then they would need a blood test. They would need a blood test 48 hours later. They would probably need a scan a week from the first one. There's just a lot of to-ing and fro-ing, and there's not a lot of answers. And you just try and kind of reassure people that you're really sorry that this is happening, but you really need to be certain about what's happening before we can move on to anything.
And if a pregnancy does develop somewhere other than the womb, is that an ectopic pregnancy?
And we're going to cover that in a different episode.
But that's something else that you can see on a scan. So just to kind of, you've gone to the early pregnancy unit, you've had a bit of bleeding, you might have had pain, you might not have had pain. We're going to go this into detail in another episode, but we might actually be able to see an ectopic pregnancy. Okay. So ectopic pregnancy is a pregnancy outside of the womb, implanted in an abnormal location, basically.
And do these never progress normally?
No. So if the pregnancy is not implanted in the correct location, we can't move it to the correct location, we can't make it grow into the correct location, it would be abnormal and will need treatment.
And it's it can be life-threatening to the woman, so it needs treating.
But that wouldn't class as a miscarriage?
Well, we usually call them ectopic pregnancies, so that it's a different kind of pregnancy loss. It's a pregnancy loss.
Yeah.
You are clearly going to, you know, you've been pregnant and you're not having this pregnancy and a baby and a pram and everything in 9 months' time. It's a loss, but it's not the same. We count them differently to try and work out kind of what's behind things. But yeah, it's still a pregnancy loss.
Management, I suppose.
We thought it was really important to discuss management, because I think most people that come into hospital, again, because miscarriage is just not discussed very much, don't know their options regarding management. And I think the first thing is that there doesn't need to be a decision right away. So if you've not heard of your options and you want to have a think about what you want to do, do it. Have a think. Don't rush into any of the options. Does not have to be decided there and then. So basically you have three options. You can wait and see what happens, so watching and waiting. You can have medical management, or you can have surgical management. And you can also kind of mix it up. So if you're like, actually, I'm going to wait and see what happens. And you were a week in, because usually we give people 2 weeks and then do a scan. Mm-hmm. If you're a week in and you're like, no, I'm done. I can't keep this going on.
Is that waiting for it to pass naturally?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess if you're waiting for a big bleep, that could be quite anxiety.
Yeah. I mean, it's personal choice. Yeah. Obviously, if there's a concern for your health and it wouldn't be safe to watch and wait, then you would get that advice. Yeah. But generally speaking, if you wanted to watch and wait, the process might happen on its own. So your body will potentially go into bleeding, cramping, and pass the pregnancy on its own. And as Nick said, you'd get a follow-up appointment to check that it's happened, and check in with you and see how you are. Yeah.
This is much more likely to happen if you've already had bleeding.
Okay. Yeah.
So if you come in with bleeding, so basically your body is starting to kind of go through this process, then this is more likely to work. If you've come in and you're 12 weeks pregnant by dates and you're actually only 9 weeks pregnant and you've not had a spot of bleeding,
yeah,
we don't know when it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I think that's the unknown is the real difficulty.
Mm-hmm. And also people have lives they want to get on with as well, which I think is hard. But that's why it's a personal choice.
Yeah.
But we would overall sort of say like about 50% of the time that is successful, that works. And in the other half of people, they would come back and potentially need some further treatment.
So medical management is when you're taking tablets. You take two different types of tablets. You usually have one and then have the second one 48 hours later. The second one you can either have as a vaginal tablet, so into your vagina, or a tablet that you take by mouth, depending on what you want to do. Mm-hmm. This stops the pregnancy hormones and then opens your cervix, basically.
Okay.
So it's working by kind of like stopping the pregnancy and making you have the bleeding. Mm. So this works in about 85% of people. So most people it will work in, but you have to decide what kind of person you are. So with this, you are going to have bleeding. Mm-hmm. You are going to pass pregnancy. Mm-hmm. When you're passing a miscarriage at home, though, you're not, on the whole, usually passing a baby because these are really early kind of pregnancies. Sometimes we haven't seen any kind of baby on a scan at all. And I think people are worried about kind of passing a pregnancy at home. Mm-hmm. And on the whole, people are actually, you're in your own environment. You can kind of sit, do what you want when you want.
Make yourself comfortable.
Yeah, and actually it's better to do that than be in hospital. Mm-hmm. But again, personal choice. If you wanted to be in hospital, we used to do medical management in hospital and we still do them for pregnancies that are further on, or any other kind of other previous complications.
Like, you know, got a risk of bleeding heavily, then you might come to hospital. And then it makes it unsafe at home, basically.
But I think a lot of people cope really well at home. We give pain relief medication for people to take, which you should take because it is uncomfortable. Yep. It's like everybody's very different, but it can be like a very painful period. Painful period.
Yeah. I think it's good as well to know, because I remember a long time ago one of my friends had a miscarriage and was given medical management. She wanted that, but had a very quick consultation and was just like, here's the tablets, go home, you're going to bleed. And then she was probably about 9 weeks, and she said that it was traumatic because she didn't know how much she was going to bleed, and she bled a lot, and she actually could see a tiny little fetus and was like traumatised by it.
Yeah.
And had she been sort of advised before that, this could happen, she would have been more prepared. So I think, you know, it might not happen, but it's good to know what can happen, and then you're mentally prepared for that happening at home.
With these tablets, does that impact afterwards your ability to get pregnant, like soon afterwards, or?
No.
Okay.
I think with the tablets, the difficulty is as well, it's that whole, you're like, right, well, I'll take the tablets, have my miscarriage on Sunday, I'll be back to work on Wednesday, I'll be, like, doesn't work like that.
So you've got your diary. Your
But I think that's what
people do.
They want to get back to it.
Yeah. And actually, that, on the whole, doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So sometimes people take the first tablet and they'll pass without even taking the second tablet.
Yeah.
Sometimes people take both of them and have no bleeding at all. And if you have no bleeding at all, then you might need a third tablet after 24 hours after the second tablet. So it's that kind of making sure that you're kind of taking all the tablets that you need and giving your body enough time, because sometimes it just needs a few more days to start bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't plan this. You can't plan it around activities. It will happen when it happens.
Yeah.
Medical management speeds up conservative management, but it doesn't cause a miscarriage like this.
Yeah, it's not an on-off button.
Yeah. So I think it's just that you've got to be prepared for it. And I think as long as you know the information, then it's a really very good option. You're avoiding surgery and the risks that come with that. You're passing a pregnancy slightly more naturally than having an operative procedure. You're speeding it up compared to conservative. But I think people just need to understand what it is.
Definitely. Make the decision that's right for you, basically. Yeah. And then you can also have surgical management, so that you do come to hospital for. You'll have some anaesthetic. That might be that you're asleep. That might be that you have local anaesthetic and you use gas and air. Again, your choice, and that will be chatted to you about. But what the actual procedure is we use a little suction device that goes into the womb, sucks out the pregnancy, and then it's all gone. There are risks with that, so... because it's a surgical procedure, it does carry more risks than the other management options. Overwhelmingly, it's very safe, but there's a risk that you can get an infection. There's a risk that we can cause a hole in the wall of the womb called a perforation, which is unlikely, but it's between 1 in 100 to 1 in 1,000 people. Okay. When you're pregnant, the womb is really soft, so it's a little bit easier to actually cause that damage. And there's also a risk that, you know, it might not actually be successful. So it works in about 95%, but there's a small number of people that A, might need a repeat procedure or might need further management afterwards.
Like Nick's go-to saying, low risk.
It's low risk, but not no risk. Yeah.
We get into it every episode.
Totally agree. It is low risk, but definitely
there is
not
also
no risk.
Like there's a risk that if you have multiple procedures like this, so if you have lots of surgical managements of miscarriage or terminations or anything that's going in your womb and scraping and causing damage, the more of them that you have, the more likely you are to get a bit of scar tissue in the womb. You will always get a bit of sort of scar tissue immediately afterwards that most of the time will heal and go away on its own. But in a very small number of women, that scar tissue might cause problems in the future with getting pregnant. So it's a really small number, and I wouldn't say that this is, you know, if it's your first miscarriage and you're thinking you just want surgical management, I don't think that would be something to worry about. No. But if you've had two before and it's your third one, maybe you need to have a little bit more of a read about the risks of that. It might be something to consider.
Can you get scar tissue from like the...
Medical management.
Yeah, that's it.
So no, I mean, you can get scar tissue from anything, but that is essentially, it's triggering your womb to do what it would do naturally. So you're not putting anything artificially into your womb.
Okay.
So that's much less, it shouldn't cause any scar tissue.
Okay.
I think it's difficult for people to understand that they might need a repeat procedure, but on the whole, it's a blind procedure. So...
Which means that we can't see inside your womb when we're going into
you've
it.
Not opened it up.
We don't want to do that.
Do these a lot. We can feel that the womb is empty, but with the best will in the world, sometimes things can be missed.
That causes an issue.
It can cause kind of continued bleeding. It can cause infection. A lot of people then would need a repeat procedure. And it's just, I think, really difficult for people to understand, especially when they're like, right, I want surgery because I need the pregnancy removed now because
You need to understand everything about it.
If someone had the surgical management and it wasn't successful, they were still bleeding, not sure what's going on, could they then have the medical management or would they need surgical?
What we would usually do is because bleeding after surgical management is normal.
Bleeding after any miscarriage is normal.
Yeah, and you can have bleeding, you know, up 2 to 3 weeks, and that can be normal after a miscarriage. So if you think that your symptoms aren't normal afterwards, you should be seen by a doctor, and most likely you would have a rescan.
Okay.
And if that scan showed that there's nothing there, you don't need any more treatment. And if your pregnancy test is negative. But if on the scan there's some pregnancy tissue left, you'll have a consultation and like kind of your individualised care will help you decide what you want to do.
Okay.
You don't always, it's not a black and white, you always have to do this and this. It depends on the situation.
So bleeding after a miscarriage is quite normal, 2 to 3 weeks, but you shouldn't be bleeding really very heavily during the miscarriage or after the miscarriage. So if you're bleeding very heavily, you're having to change your pads very often, then you need to seek medical attention. Sometimes when people have conservative or medical management, they would then need to have surgical management because they're bleeding too heavily. So don't sit at home being like, they've said bleeding's normal. If you're sat on a toilet and can't move from the toilet, just get checked out. Like overwhelmingly, if you're worried, get someone to check
out. Also, when we say get checked out, is this a situation where you would call and book an appointment, or is it you would go to A&E?
Go to your early pregnancy unit if you can attend, or go to an A&E.
So like if you've got a fever, a temperature, if you are in extreme pain, if you're bleeding so heavily that you can't get off the toilet, or you fill in a pad every 30 minutes and it's not stopping, you feel dizzy, you faint, you need emergency care. So whatever that is in your area, it might be A&E, it might be your early pregnancy unit.
Okay.
Don't delay.
Yeah, don't delay.
And have someone with you. Like, if you're going to do this at home, have someone there with you who can keep an eye on you.
Yeah.
Other aftercare things. So generally, regardless of what you choose to do, 2 to 3 weeks later, you'll be advised to do a pregnancy test. If that's negative, that tells you that the pregnancy's gone.
Yeah.
If it's positive, you need to get back in touch. Mm-hmm. And also, I think it's really important because most of these people are trying to get pregnant.
Yeah.
So everyone wants to know when they can try again. Mm-hmm. And it's best to wait until you've had that negative test at least. And it's also, you know, sometimes advised to wait until your next period so that you know where you are. I think...
I don't think it matters,
Yeah. As long as you've had that negative test, that's the thing that you need, because then you know that that pregnancy is over, and if there's another one, it's a new pregnancy.
A headspace situation.
Yeah.
If you feel
when you're ready.
Ready from a headspace situation, then I don't think that you're anything out.
No. Mm-hmm. I think in the olden days, it used to be like, have 3 periods before you get pregnant again, but there's no reason for that.
Definitely.
So, negative test, good to go if you want to.
Yeah. So... and with regards to pregnancy loss, when you're in hospital and you have kind of a surgical management, there'll be different options that you can do with your pregnancy. The pregnancy is yours. The pregnancy doesn't have to be sent anywhere. You can keep the pregnancy if you'd like. You can keep the baby.
Oh, this is like tissue.
Yeah.
If there is one, because, you know, it will depend on how many weeks you are.
It depends how many weeks you are, but you have all the options.
Yeah.
You don't have to, you don't have to conform. You can do what you like.
This so it's not like yours. If you have like your appendix out and they take it away and they do stuff with it. Yeah. This is, you can do something.
Yeah, it's different because it's a pregnancy, isn't it? So it is treated differently and respectfully regardless of what you choose to do.
Yeah.
But you will, regardless of where you go, you will have someone who comes to talk to you and give you the options.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And either option is fine.
Yes.
Were you going to say something and you had a little...
Well, no, I was thinking something, but it was a bit weird. I was just thinking...
Oh, good.
Say, when you said if you had your appendix out, you can't take your appendix home.
Well, no, because a lot of the time you need someone to then look at that appendix and see, is it normal? Is it infected? And that's part of your care to find out what is actually the diagnosis.
Yeah, I probably should have just kept that in my head. I feel like
Americans take stuff home from the hospital a lot more.
Yeah, my grandma had a gallstones in a little tube.
It would be cool to have a bit of something and take it home.
The weirdest one is Miriam, my best friend's acquaintance in America, like our age, 25, had a full hysterectomy, has it in a jar on a bedside table, freaks me out, can't do
that. Oh my god, I've seen people online with that, like a little uterus in a jar.
But it's like a real one.
I'm just loving that she said our age.
Well, this is...
Yeah, I'm 25, right?
Yeah.
Oh, 25, yeah.
I'm not even 25 yet, I'm only 24. Sorry, anyway.
Stop bragging.
We digress.
Anyway.
So, any questions?
Yeah.
I think we've covered everything that we need to.
We do have some questions from the public.
Yeah.
From the public.
Like we're on the villa or something.
Yeah, I feel like we also had lots of questions.
Yeah.
But we've covered a lot.
We've brought them up. Yeah. Okay.
So... A few of these have already been covered.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Are some people more prone than others to having a miscarriage?
Yeah, so as we said, age. So the older you get, the more likely you are to have a miscarriage. And then there are certain people that will have conditions such as we discussed, sticky blood.
Yeah.
We might do a little video on that separate.
Yeah.
I think that's something we can go into. So there are certain things that would make people more prone to having miscarriages, but on the whole, it's sporadic. It's one of those things that happens.
Just by chance, rather than it being an underlying cause most times.
And I think we kind of touched on this, but people have been asking, if I have one, am I going to have, is this going to be my pregnancy journey?
Yeah.
So no. So if you have one, then the chances of your next pregnancy being a normal pregnancy are higher than the chances of your next pregnancy being a miscarriage.
Yes, okay.
Same again for two.
Yeah.
And even for three, the chances of you having a normal pregnancy next time is still higher than having another miscarriage.
Yeah.
But the more you have, the more likely you are to have another one.
Yeah, and have that underlying condition. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Someone has asked, will you always know when it's happened?
No. We covered that. I think it's really sad when people... don't have a scan until kind of 12 weeks pregnant and don't know that they've had a miscarriage.
It can be really hard.
Yeah, it's really hard.
Just to go back to the previous question, I have on the Tommy's website, which we'll give you a link for, they actually have a miscarriage calculator, which is for people who have that question. So you can put in like your age, I think a little bit about your medical history, and then if you've had one miscarriage or two, and it gives you
and
like
your live births, I think you put in
it
as well.
Yeah, it gives you a bit of information about what the percentage chance of your next pregnancy being a miscarriage. Yeah. And
what
it's always reassuring. It's so we'll put the link on the end of the thing, but it's a website for it's an organisation that do support and research in miscarriage and early pregnancy.
Yeah, because you mentioned it earlier and I was thinking, who's Tommy?
Yeah.
Right, I understand now.
Yeah.
Someone had asked, is it always painful? And this is what we'd discussed.
So like, I don't think there's any point of saying, oh, don't worry, you'll just pass it and it'll be like a period. Because it is quite uncomfortable. Like, and again, different people are different. We're going to talk about various different operative procedures and different people's pain thresholds are different, but you've got to remember you're having a miscarriage, so you're really flipping upset as well.
Yeah.
So I think you know that, I don't know, having your eyebrows done at different times of the month can be more and less painful. Yeah. If you're already mega upset about something and you're having to go through
something painful,
the bleeding and the cramps and stuff, it's probably going to be more painful. Mm-hmm. But I still think medical management is a really good option. Most people cope very well with it.
Yeah.
And yes, it is rubbish.
Yeah. We also have some myths that we got from all sorts of places, Facebook, TikTok.
So there's one that kind of like encompasses a lot of things. Food poisoning and eating different things can cause miscarriage. So you know how, you know, you're not meant to eat sushi, brie, raw eggs,
camembert, unless you boil it.
It
has to be bubbling.
It has to be hot, so these things are, so these foods that you're meant to avoid in pregnancy, the reason you're supposed to avoid them is because you can get an infection like Listeria, E. coli, Salmonella. You can get that infection if you eat those foods. If you did eat those foods and were unlucky and got an infection, there's a chance that your pregnancy might be affected by it, and that can cause problems and it can cause miscarriage. Yeah. But it doesn't mean that if you go out and eat brie, you're going to have a miscarriage.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's safer to avoid those things. Yeah.
If you didn't know.
But if you have had a bit of brie and then found out you're pregnant the next day and you're well, it's not very unlikely.
Okay.
Yeah. And also with like soft cheeses, it's if it's pasteurised. So some bries are pasteurised. So you have to find that out.
Some
brie you can eat.
Oh,
okay. But you have to be sure.
Find the loophole.
And also, if you drink small amounts of alcohol before you realise that you're pregnant, that will always cause a miscarriage.
Yeah, untrue. Yeah.
Even if you drink a large amount.
I think
that
is something
if you don't know you're pregnant,
especially
yet.
People who are not planning on getting pregnant can worry about, because if they don't realise they're pregnant and then they're like, oh my God, I went out last week and had a bottle of wine.
That happens more often than not, because you don't know you're pregnant until you miss your period or you do a test. So.
Yeah. And I think you're not going to be constantly doing a test if you're not planning
if
on
you're
getting
normal.
Pregnant.
Yeah. Which most people are not, and it's hard.
Another one that I think we have touched on is that having sex will affect a pregnancy, cause a miscarriage, and I guess that's like the speculum exams, isn't it?
It's like the speculum exam, and it's also like the vaginal probe that we use for the ultrasound. None of these cause a miscarriage. It might be that you have sex and 2 days later you have bleeding, but it's not the sex that's caused the bleeding.
Yeah.
Same with things like exercise.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And finally, also something that we've touched on earlier, but it's a myth that it's always due to issues with the women's egg and the women's reproductive system, which is not
always.
True.
Not always. No. You can get various different conditions, and we know that sperm quality decreases with age, but it's just at a later age.
Okay.
I think we've covered everything that we want to cover.
It's a big topic, isn't it? But I think we've covered everything. Yep. And if you have any other questions, obviously you can reach out to us on social media and ask.
Yeah,
and we're happy to answer anything.
And we'll put the links in the comment section as well.
Yep. So, disclaimer. So everything that we've said today, they're our own opinions. It shouldn't be taken as medical advice. And our opinions are not associated with where we work.
Yeah, please make sure you're following us wherever you get your podcasts.
And on the social medias at Between Two Ovaries on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, the lot.
Thank you for listening, and we look forward to welcoming you back to our next episode.
Thanks.